thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. And before we do anything, the NYPD Blue Balls team, which is mostly me and Kyle, offer condolences to the family of Austin Majors. He is the gentleman that played Theo Sipowicz for several seasons of NYPD Blue. He has died at the age of 27. Rest in peace to him, and our condolences go out to his family and fans. We also wanted to give you a heads up that this episode and several episodes coming up were recorded before his death. I don't think we talk about him that much because I don't think he's in a lot of these episodes, but we wanted to at least acknowledge it here and say rest in peace, Austin Majors. Also, just like usual, this is a commentary episode, so we are watching Season 7, Episode 13 of NYPD Blue while recording this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. You can follow along with that or not, whatever you'd like to do. See you at the end. Peace.
One.
Two. Three.
Three. Go.
Hit. All right, everybody. Welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This episode is The Irvin Files, Season 7, Episode 13. I forgot how this one starts. Oh, yeah, this one. Okay. Sipowicz and Sorensen...
It's the art, right? The art's stealing?
Yeah, Sipowicz and Sorensen show up to an apartment, and somebody has stolen the art, and the guy who owns the art just left, because it made him too sad.
Super rich types, I can see that.
This episode, I mean, I don't want to ruin it this early, but this episode's kind of boring in my opinion. I don't know how you feel.
I think there's one good, one interesting performance in here.
I'm very curious to what that is, but, we have the whole episode to find out.
Yeah, we'll see. There's one interesting, the one person I like in it.
But essentially, this guy, Noel Beller, is hanging out with this lady, Nikki Cameron, and someone stole his art, so he's like, I need to go get a drink, and just left. So they're just looking at his place, and they discover that the front door is bashed up on both sides, which makes no sense.
Yeah, because how... Why would that happen if they were breaking in, Kirk?
You don't break in to break out.
Yeah. Unless you're like the Hives or something.
What?
I feel like that's a Hive song or something.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It does sound like a Hive song.
That sounds exactly like a Hive song.
It'd be a really simple drum beat.
Like, you gotta break in. You gotta break in to break out.
So this is
suits and shit.
This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is Season 7, Episode 13, The Irvin Files. And we also have the guest, The Hives. You break in to break out!
Yeah, because that's all it's so.
I'm so glad I did get to see him live once. Conveniently, I saw them live in Salt Lake City, where you just were. They played a show...
Yeah, did you have any fun beforehand? Probably not. That's probably the greatest show you've ever been to.
But it was great, because there's like a pretty serious noise ordinance in Salt Lake City. And the lead singer of the Hives, because they played last, was like, apparently, yo city doesn't like it loud after a certain time. But look in my face, because I do not care.
he seems like how am I going to say this? Like a non-sexual assaulty Mick Jagger would be.
Oh, 100%. He is 100% that guy.
Yeah, like if like Mick Jagger didn't like just destroy women, you know?
And probably have sex with David Bowie, even though they won't say it out loud.
See, that's fine. Like, I don't care about that. Like, if you want to have sex with David Bowie, have sex with David Bowie. Like, that's your deal. But, like, don't take advantage of underage girls.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyways.
So this episode,
one half of the stories is this guy coming in acting like a fucking weirdo.
I love this guy.
I was wondering if this was the performance you appreciated, and I guess it is.
Like, the way Metavoy looks at him, like, he's like, the guy hasn't blinked. He hasn't looked at them once. He's just, like, telling his story like a weirdo robot. I have worked with someone like this.
Well, what is interesting, and not to be too spoilery, once again, you should probably have watched the episode before you listen to this podcast, but when I saw how weird he was, immediately I was like, God, I hope he didn't do it, and this is just who this dude is. You know what I mean?
That would be cool. That would be a choice. But no, I like there are like I have worked with people at Trader Joe's that have like give off this personality. It's not there's not like it's just how they are, you know?
Yeah, he basically is saying without any emotion or looking at anybody in the eyes that his wife has gone missing. She was supposed to get on a
plane or train or something.
I think it was a flight. I thought she was supposed
but
to
get look, on a flight. Every time Metavoy gets in his eyesight, he adjusts his eyes. It's really weird.
And Jones
it's really creepy.
And Jones does the same thing, where he tries to get into his eye line.
And then all he does is put his eyes on the table. It's so, it's like such a good, like, I don't know, I think it's so creepy and so good.
He also does that thing where the way he responds to questions is so strange, where they were like, at one point they say, were you faithful to your wife? Yes. Like, was she faithful to you? And he's like, I think so. Like, and he's like, well, what was she going to do? He's like, she was going to our, what did he say? She was going to our vacation home to get some of our belongings. We're going to put it up on the market. And it was like, well, did you call in or anything? And he's just like, no. Like, every response was so muted and weird. But I was
I don't think I'm spoiling anything here, but this is one of them episodes where it straight up is just like, we know who did this crime. like, and now we're just going to show you, like, the weird webbing of how we get to find the answer. But, yeah. And, okay, so there's two people, I think, that give pretty good performances. And I really like the Noel, or whatever, the dude with the glasses, the eccentric guy.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Nicky Cameron, played by Jamie Rose.
No, that was annoying. No, I like how him and Sipwitz play with each other. Like, I like how he's like, just like right now, he's like, you asked me, how's it going?
Yeah, this dude who's playing Noel Beller, a famous face, it's Stanley Kamel. He has died. I think he died a few years ago, actually, in 2008.
Oh, that's a while, dude.
I think he's most famous for, he was a doctor on the show Monk for several episodes.
Yes.
But he does a great job as a Vicodin dude, but I think that annoyed me. Like, it annoyed me more than anything how good he was at being a Vicodin dude.
A Vicodin dude?
You know, one of those people that, like, they just take Vicodin so they're spacey and, like, whatever.
This is interesting. You think he was just doing Vicodin, huh?
They mentioned it, like, 18 times, Kyle.
Sarcasm, Kurt.
Yeah, I got it just now. I just you put me in a trap, Kyle. You laid the bait. You laid the bait, and then you watched. One thing
acting,
I wanted to say:
the best acting of all is our boy John, just in the background, having like personal panic attacks, hearing about these pieces of art.
Yeah. It's also funny because John is the first dude to turn on this Noel guy. Like, John is the first guy.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's not the only substance he had in him today. And it was like, John? John's going hard on this, dude.
Yeah, as the years go along and we get more comfortable with John, with having a gay character on TV, they let him be a little bit more sassier. I do. I feel like in the beginning, like, I feel like really, like, if you look at his character in the beginning, he is not a, what's the word? Like, he's not there to cause problems. He's, like, not there to really, like, give or take a lot away from the story. He adds things here and there, but, like, I feel like as, like, the years went on and people got more comfortable, it's like, oh, it's not a gay guy on TV, it's John on TV. They let him, mm-hmm. like, develop more of a personality.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree, like, with that.
Like, think back to fucking, Martinez, right? Like, Martinez's first introduction for us into him is, like, he's, like, hanging off the side of a building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's jumping from, like, one fire escape to another. And then, like, John's is just, like, he just comes in and he's, like, the PA. And, like, I don't know. It's just really interesting to me how they did it.
It seems like they at first were, like, let's have this character. He's gay. But he's just really good at his job. Like, we don't talk about it. It's just, he's, like, the best PAA we've had. And
Kirk, I mean, like, and that's all we're asking, right? We're just asking that they, like, if you want to be gay, like, be gay quietly and just do your job. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm not getting brought into another sarcasm trap, Kyle. I know that you're fucking around.
Don't have any personality. Don't, like, be yourself. Like, just shut up and go away.
But no, yeah. They also kind of start including him in, like, the other characters of the show. Like, oh, we have other gay characters. John is gay. He can interact with them, but yeah. It's not about... Here's another famous face. You know who this lovely gentleman is?
Well, who?
That's Bill Clark.
Oh, for real?
That is Bill Clark. That is the guy who was the consultant, then producer on this show. Former police detective.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
How excited have you been all day to tell me that?
I'm very excited. But I want to tell you, okay. I want to tell you something else that's absolutely nuts. Okay. So I looked at his IMDb credits. Right now he's playing like an art detective. It's very strange.
Uh-huh.
But I looked at his credits. He's only ever played police officers, which makes sense. However, he only plays police officers with the last name Clark. And... Uh-huh. And he did play a character named Bill Clark in a detective movie. And I was like, well, what detective movie is this? It is a 90s horror detective story with Denzel Washington and John Goodman.
Uh-huh.
Called Fallen.
Yeah, I mean, Falling?
Fallen. F-A-L-L-E-N. It's about a serial okay. killer that possesses other killers, Kyle.
I do remember this movie.
And apparently Bill Clark is in it ostensibly as himself. And I'm excited to see it.
Good for him, dude.
But yeah, that's Billy Clark. I mean, half the reason this show is good, because he was a real consultant from the NYPD.
So I've been having Deadwood on in the background while I do while I work from home.
Mm-hmm. And, that's a good way to stay productive.
Fuck, it is not. it's not when you're watching like the best written TV show ever. but no, dude, like I just like there was like a 2 or 3 episode run where like every fucking like small character, side character was like in NYPD Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like the Webster killer was in it. There was another guy who he shot the Webster killer, the guy, the sniper from the balcony. Like there was all this like all of these fucking like people just kept popping up, and I was like, oh my god! And then Metaboy pops in there,
mm-hmm.
and then the crazy Russian guy that we did not too long ago, who like killed his kids and went to the yeah, like, it's just, like, all this crazy shit, and it's like, god damn, dude, I just forget how good both of these shows were.
And speaking of good moments, here we have way too long a scene where this woman comes to them with information that they already know, that Noelle's cousin, who had a key to the building, is actually in New York and not in Europe, as he previously thought. It also looks like an opportunity for Ricky Schroeder to give her those little boy eyes to get her all ready to go, because he's trying to lay on that Ricky Schroeder charm.
It's a chance for Rick to introduce her to little Ricky.
His little Lord Fauntleroy, which is a very inside joke that I don't think a lot of people will get.
We need to... Oh, God. So, like, legit, though, like, if... I mean, I don't want to offend our uncle, but, like, if you were legit, like, a grown man, would you want people calling you Ricky?
No. No, sir.
No, right?
Well, I believe...
No one calls our uncle Ricky anyways, and if they do it, it's, they're always doing it to, like, fuck with him, right?
And I think Ricky Schroeder, he officially changed his name to Rick Schroeder for this show. Because it's always credited as Rick Schroeder, but we call him Ricky because fuck him. for many reasons. For many different reasons.
For sure. For sure.
But, yeah, Rick Schroeder. Well, this scene goes on way too long, and it's just him trying to get an in with this woman who may have planned this robbery. But I did want to mention one thing about this woman. It's Nikki Cameron, played by Jamie Rose. When you go to IMDb, she just has a different face. And I don't know if that's just a different person, or okay, if, like, steps in modern medicine have just changed everything about her face.
Well, that's rude. I mean, I don't think we should be commenting on people's...
Look, I would say the same thing if I looked at any of these actors or actresses on IMDb, and it looks like a completely different person. It's not...
I mean...
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And it's not even like, oh my god, she's hot now, she wasn't then. It's more of like, her face is just completely different. But there was also an awkward thing that I thought was dumb, where he offered a drink and she took a Sprite. And she's like, I haven't had one of those since college. And it's like, what? Is Sprite a child's drink?
I don't know, she could have just been, like, flirting with him, dude.
Yeah, she was. She's trying to get
him. I don't know, that is kind of weird. She could just be like, look at me, look how fit I am. I don't drink soda.
So, this is a conversation
right,
about...
I think I'm gonna have to agree with you. This episode's pretty boring.
Because, yeah, this episode, like, certain scenes take a lot longer than they should, and the characters, like, aren't interesting enough to pull it all the way through. And when we do have interesting characters, they're talking about random nonsense. Like, it's not the best.
I agree. It is weird.
Now, a great question is, do you recognize this dude?
No.
This gentleman, who is Kent Falcon, he's playing Randall Dixon. His major contribution, which he does a great job, he's a guy who works at a car service and was renting out a van to Dwight Gunther, the guy who's looking for his wife. He saw the
deadhead.
Yeah, the weirdo. He saw the missing posters and is looking for this reward, but tells him a story about how Gunther was acting all weird and moving around three large suitcases that may or may not contain the body parts of his wife.
That's like, okay. Like, to go from, like, like, that's a huge stretch. To just be like, hey, this guy was moving suitcases, could have been a body in there. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the kid ends up being like 100% right, like, spoiler. Yeah. But, like, at the same time, like, they literally, like, sit down and he goes, like, let me tell you this story. This guy's acting weird. He's moving a suitcase and they go, like, suitcase with dead bodies. And he goes, could have been.
Now that you mention
and
it.
And they're just like,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they're like, oh, cool, thanks. Like, it's just so funny.
Yeah, and they do it. It happens because Jones says, did the bag smell weird at all? And the guy kind of like looks around and goes, oh my God. And it's like, they didn't say there was a body in there. Like, they're asking you questions. But this dude, like, his face was eating at me. I was like, I definitely saw this dude. And this is going to be a random moment. In the movie Men in Black, he's the dude that does the training with Will Smith that gives that speech where he's like, you're here because you're looking for the best of the best of the best, sir, and then sits down, and then Will Smith makes fun of him.
Oh, okay.
He was one of those dudes that also looked at him very strange when Will Smith pulled the desk over to himself in that hilarious scene from the original Men in Black. Great movie still. Check it out.
Oh, you mean not that sweet, sweet flick, Men in Black International?
Never saw it. Because Kyle, I don't know if you know this, I could see the writing on the wall in that trailer.
I saw it, you know? I saw it because Dad wanted to see it.
That trailer told me, no thank you.
I'm good. No, that movie was basically, hey, Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth are, like, really cool together in Thor.
Mm-hmm.
We have this really bad script for this other intellectual property. Let's just throw them in it and hope it works out.
Well, supposedly, there was talks to converge the 21 Jump Street universe with Men in Black. And they were going to make
these conversations.
Huh?
I remember these conversations.
And they were going to do this crazy crossover, and I was like, that could be really fun. And then it fell through, so they're like, well, we still got to make a Men in Black movie. And I was like, no, you don't. You don't have to.
We have to.
You don't. And this scene is great, because here, Medavoy is doing a joke about the guy being from outer space, and it's not going over well. And he keeps going.
No, Metavoy's jokes don't go over well. Weird.
But I absolutely love at the end of this scene, he is so pissed at Jones for no fucking reason. He is so bitchy. He's like, thanks for the life raft. He's like, when did you want me to give you a life raft?
So, he's going to get mad when I say this, but this little tantrum is giving me dad vibes.
But I also love this part when he turns around and is like, we are never talking about that conversation ever again.
No, but the way he's reacting is giving, like, how our dad would react to things, I feel like.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes when, like, things don't go his way and he gets, like, and you're not there to help him, but you're making fun of him.
Speaking of great
that's
jokes.
That's what I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Speaking of great jokes, we talked over one right there where the Vicodin dude says, even the mortally wounded get asked how it's going, and then literally every person says, how's it going to everybody else in the next, like, two scenes.
Yeah.
Like, that's some like Arrested Development level joke writing right there. Also, that dude looks creepy, right?
Yeah, like, and why is he so intense? Like, is he so upset about?
He looks like he belongs in the movie series Blade. but he is just this dude's cousin.
Blade.
He needs to be fighting Wesley Snipes on a roof to some crazy techno music.
Excuse you, it's Snips.
It's what?
Snips.
It's who?
Wesley Snips.
Whoa, Wesley. What the fuck? I'm going to steal a joke from a YouTube channel I like. We need to check that on WesleySnopes.com.
I don't get it.
Snopes.com is where you go to check if there's a, if that's just an internet rumor or a real thing.
Oh, I didn't know. I don't know what Snopes is, so this is new to me. I think I have a life, so that's why I don't know what Snopes is.
Anyway, here the Vicodin dude just tells them, now I'm starting to get suspicious of Nikki after we've talked about it a little bit more, and she's currently at my place.
Do you think the Vicodin dude is playing them?
Well, no. I mean, we find out that...
No, I'm saying, like, as of right now, where we're at, do you feel like he is, like... Do you think he's figuring it out in real time, or do you think he knows that he's playing dumb and using them? You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying?
Oh, he's playing dumb and using them, because according to the scene that they're about to go do, he's already talked to Nikki about giving up money for the art. So he's just sending the police officers, assuming that she'll be there with the art or with information, then they'll bust her. What they don't know is that she'll have somebody with her and a gun. But right now, we just have one of these... We have one of these no-dialogue montages that are supposed to tell us that Mr. Gunther was thinking about dropping off something here, but since they don't say anything, you just have to assume that?
Yeah, that it looks like he did, but he didn't.
It also makes me think that they definitely filmed with dialogue and then just decided, nah, no dialogue.
I wonder if they filmed two stories, one where they didn't know he was the killer and one where they did.
No, maybe. I doubt it, but maybe.
Well, no, I remember, I think I've brought this up before, I remember reading, maybe this was later, but like there were points where it got during like shooting that Botchko would like change things up, like on the fly.
Yeah.
And would literally write the story like as they were filming.
Well, I know that's why Jimmy Smits wanted out. Cause they would do that kind of shit all the time. So
yeah, but why would that bother you? Like, I don't know, that's weird.
I think it also like pushed back their time and shit. Like, I think it would mean that they would have to be on set longer, and it would probably cause more complications. But how interesting... I'm sorry.
Yeah, so your decision is to go to Dexter?
Actually, at that point, it was the West Wing.
Yeah, that was not a bad decision. I haven't gotten to those years yet, but...
So, and we talked over the fact that they caught Nikki with some dude who had a gun.
Oh yeah, sorry.
I mean, it's not that's the thing. I think this episode's kind of boring. And it's weird because this is an exciting idea, but it just is boring-ish. The dude, Noel, calls them and then on speakerphone is like, hey, was it fun when you caught them? And he's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you could have just told us that that was going on. We would have arrested her rather than finding out when we got here.
I mean, that's what makes me think, like, I think he knew the whole time. I think he figured it out after the first time he went to, and he talked to them. You know what I mean?
You mean the very first time he spoke to them at the station house?
Yes. I think he knew it.
Well, there is a moment. That he, yeah.
After that, he knew it, who it was.
Because there is a moment at the station house where they're all talking, and she says something, and then Danny says something, and he kind of gives a look, like, where his eyes kind of squint a little bit, where he's like, huh, I didn't think about that. So I think he got suspicious, yeah. But I don't know if he knew.
Yeah, I think he figures it out later.
So here we got Jones and Medavoy talking to the weirdo, saying that they found a woman that more or less fits his wife's description in Atlantic City, but she was kind of out of it. And he's like, well, cool. Can I talk to her later? And they're all like, usually people are a little more excited to talk to their wife who's been found.
See, what I like about his performance is he doesn't, even here, he doesn't really change how he was before, but he does in a bit. Because when they start saying, like, oh, we have found your wife, this and that, you can kind of tell in his demeanor, he starts to freak out.
Oh, yeah. He's
pretty good.
He also freaks out once he admits that he did something to his wife, and he starts to kind of change in intensity, and that part was really dope, too.
I like his performance a lot.
I do too, but I also think I would have liked it 100 times more, and I would have liked this episode more if we found out he had nothing to do with it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we found out this is just how this dude acts, like, maybe he has...
And it was... How cool would have been if you could tie it in that it was the guy who actually came in to try to get the reward
money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Like, I mean, they've written weirder and crazier endings and stories. Like, I just thought it would have been cool that this guy comes in, acts like this, talks like this, and then they find out, like, oh, he had nothing to do with it. He's just, you know, a little different.
And then
it'd be really cool if, like, they met his kids or something, and they were super normal. But
he reminds me a little bit of somebody I used to work with at APU, and we'll leave it at that.
But yeah, he's like. He's like, well, is that woman going to be your wife? He's like, I don't know. Maybe you should ask them if they're a decent human being you can live with. Like, his eyes get real crazy, and his teeth kind of show how crooked they are. And then he also says, I can't get rid of her. And this is also where Jones finds out for the first time that Medavoy's wife left him.
That's right, she did leave him.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was fucking the grocer or something, right?
Yeah, but didn't he leave the house? So didn't he really leave her?
I don't know, it's debatable. I don't know. I should watch.
Okay, the dude with, like Starburns' dad, like...
Oh, yeah.
Isn't he a famous face?
Oh, he is. That would be Tuck Watkins. T-U-C, not K, T-U-C Watkins, and Tuck Watkins, you might remember from The Mummy.
Kirk, I hate to break this to you, I've never seen a Mummy movie.
The first Mummy and the second Mummy are pretty dope. But he's in The Mummy. He's also, this scene was funny. because, well, one, here's Danny just walking in on a woman changing. Somehow that's okay.
Well, she's being arrested. She has no rights.
But Tuck Watkins, I know him most from playing God slash NASCAR driver in Miracle in Lane 2, starring Frankie Muniz.
Yeah, that's not where I know him from, so...
You might know him from Desperate Housewives?
No.
Let's see, what are his known for, is actually? Well, he's known for The Mummy, a movie you've never seen. You know what he was also in? No joke. Well, he was in 276 episodes of One Life to Live. But he was also on Harry and the Hendersons, the television series.
I have a feeling of seeing him, like, in a movie as, like, basically the character he is now, but like the douchey boyfriend.
He's got a lot of TV credits and stuff. He's been all around, but I just think the most well-known things are...
The soap opera thing, that's what it might be, to be honest. It could be a soap opera thing.
Because, yeah, he was on a soap opera for many years. Almost 10. I did enjoy, because this is Danny convincing her to get her boyfriend... which we didn't even say his name, but
Derek,
they're convincing her to get him to talk about their plan, to reduce her sentence. And then she's like, how is he going to corroborate my innocence? And then Danny yelled at her, are you innocent? And I was like, that's pretty.
Give him the Emmy.
Give him the Emmy.
Can we retroactively give him that Emmy back?
We're still trying to get it for Danny Pudi, so no.
For what?
Community, Kyle.
Okay, like, no.
Okay, well, fine. You're right. We need to give it to another guy in Mad Men, because he played a woman beater really well.
Hey. It's our heritage, baby.
Hey, can you act slightly drunk and... self-important
women
and win some Emmys? Yeah. Sure. But yeah, here we find out that he picked her up in Vegas. And she was like a college-educated loser. And then he convinced her, let's go rob some rich dude that you can get in good with. That's basically the whole point of the scene. But she also
Can you be college educated and a loser? Because, I mean, the Democrats have been telling me all I need is a college education and I'm good to go.
So surprisingly, they were wrong. Also, I do enjoy that she made fun of his Randy Travis sideburns, because we're at the point where I'm not even sure who Randy Travis is.
Oh, are you kidding me, Kirk?
Who the fuck is Randy Travis?
He's a country singer, and I think he always wore black and then had, like, thick sideburns.
Here is the first sighting of Kirkendall in the entire episode. And she is literally getting paid in this episode just to do one scene with this guy.
That's mad funny, dude. I just, I googled Randy Travis, and I would have to say I've been through maybe 30 pictures, and none of them have sideburns.
He really ditched the look after this episode came out, I guess.
I think I would have to guess to say that dude never had sideburns.
It's just some weird Mandela effect from 2000s. It's like, we know Randy Travis had his sideburns. It's like, he never had sideburns.
Kirk, I even googled Randy Travis sideburns, and it doesn't even come up.
Nowadays, the kids.
I don't even think that dude. Kirk. Conspiracy. I don't even think Granny Chavez can grow facial hair.
Nowadays, people would just say Starburns.
Okay, not people. Like, a very small group of people would say Starburns. Like, community's not, like, etched into the, like, pantheon of life, like, Friends or something, Kirk.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer.
They're kind of gone out.
Also, his name is Alex. Maybe you should have spent half an hour carving that into your face.
My name is Alex.
Oh shit, looks like the law offices of Seacrest and Slumdog didn't make it into there.
Okay today.
Oh shit. But yeah, this episode's boring. We're talking about other shows.
Princess blah blah blah, how's the trade embargo with the boot?
Basically, they
before they had random writers take over and turn Kang into a caricature, or Chang into a caricature, he was fucking hilarious, dude.
Yeah, he was. So this, they just fuck with the guy pretending they're gonna arrest him for sending him into that house with a person with a gun. And then now they're like, well, we could have someone take his stash off of him downstairs. And then Danny is like, well, we're above that. And then they look at each other. It's like, no, let's go fuck with him some more.
Hey, I'm not against it.
Yeah, I'm not either. That dude was a douche.
Again, I think he and the other guy do a really good job of, like, creating those characters.
Yeah, I think the characters were good. It's just the way that they organized these stories and then edited them, it just didn't work out too well.
Yeah, I don't think both of these stories should have been together.
Yeah. That's fair.
One of them could have split it up and like put one with a more put them both with like a more like upbeat case or an upbeat storyline. I feel like they're two slow storylines put together.
And then the ending of this episode is Sipowicz trying to like convince his son to be an artist because he saw a bunch of art today that to him looks the same as his son's watercolors.
Yeah, it's the same.
It's the same, you'd say?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. This is that boomer logic sometimes that, like, annoys me. It's like they just look at something and be like, you're telling me you can't do that?
That's like any time you talk to an older person and they're like, oh, it's just an animated movie. And you're like, an animated movie can convey complex themes and ideas. No, it's for kids. And it's like, okay, well then I'm done fucking talking to you. Like, it's just a medium. But, okay.
Yeah, it's just a different way to, like, yeah, for sure.
Also...
Yeah, I agree.
This episode kind of has a weird ending. Like, it's just... Sipowicz and his son hanging out. The end.
The end.
Ah, well. Anything else you wanted to say about this? I feel like we wrapped it up towards the end of that ep.
Why is it called the Irving Files?
I was wondering the same thing. Like, it almost seems like a placeholder one.
Like, John had nothing to do with that. And no one else was named Irving.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm wondering if this is supposed to be the title of the one where John Irvin, like, helped out with those, that one suspect. But I don't know. I have no idea why. It's called the Irvin Files.
I don't know. They seem pretty intent with how they have chosen things, you know?
Yeah, like every title has a reason, a reasoning to it, but I don't know. It makes no sense. But yeah, that's it. That's this one. I don't think it was very good, but I think it was more editing and just pacing. But that's it.
No, I totally agree. I think, like I said, there's two good performances. I mean, the guy Tuck isn't bad.
No, he's not bad.
For what he's supposed to be. I mean, the girl's like, whatever. But yeah, I think there's just two good performances, and like you said, they're just slow.
And then we had that guy from Blade.
Yeah, that random appearance.
Alrighty. Well, that's it, everybody. I got nothing else.
Peace. Yeah, I'm with you on it. That sums up, I think, the episode.
Laters.
Thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Please rate and review the show wherever you rate and review your podcast, because hopefully people see the podcast and then end up watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. NYPD Blue right now is streaming on Hulu as well as Amazon Prime, so if you just need it in your life, that's where you get it. There's a couple of books out there if you just need to scratch that itch a little bit more. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. There is What Would Sipwits Do, a collection of articles about the show. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for 99¢. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. But I'll be honest, we don't use them that much, except to announce new episodes of the show. We have the Asher Brothers Podcast, which has some episodes, but they're very rare and not really happening anymore. Also, I am on Twitch at Kirk Has Glasses and at Kirk Has Glasses on all the social medias. And once again, rest in peace to Austin Majors, who played Theo Sipowicz. Have a good one.